this weather can get to the point of making it feel pretty cozy to stay home. So thank you for your dedication and the depth of your practice that you're here today. That's a gift to yourself and a gift to all of us. And we begin, as you are aware, with a guided sit, because we may have gotten our bodies here, but to really get our awareness and our sense of being fully here, Jace is going to guide us in a seated practice for the beginning portion of our time together. And if it's helpful at all for people to get some kind of a blanket or something to cozy up, you got one, huh? Yeah. Then do feel free to get another cushion or a blanket or something that might help you to feel a little more comfortable, especially amidst this wintry day. We're spoiled here in Santa Cruz, so we don't know how to deal with real winter weather, do we? No. Okay.
All right. So we'll go ahead and do some formal sitting practice together to help ourselves arrive here in this moment, in this space, help our minds and our attention catch up to our bodies. So finding a comfortable position, something that's relaxed but also alert so that it's sustainable for the next 15 or so minutes. And if you're comfortable doing so, closing your eyes or downcasting your gaze, letting your gaze go softer and unfocused in front of you if you choose to keep your eyes open. And simply beginning to settle into this body, into this moment. Taking some time here at the beginning of the meditation to make any minor adjustments to your posture. Checking in with the spine to see that it's upright without being uptight. Checking the position of the neck and the head and the jaw. Bringing some awareness to the shoulders. Noticing any tension in the muscles. And with some non-judgmental kindness, if you do find any tension, seeing if you can let it go. If it prefers to stick around, simply noticing that it's there. And moving on to check in with the rest of the body. Noticing that in this present moment there may be some residual thoughts or feelings following us from our days, our previous experiences. And again, with non-judgmental kind awareness, simply taking the temperature of this mind, this body, this heart. Noticing that right now this is how it is. noticing if at any point you get caught up in thinking and feeling. The mind has wandered away from the present moment experience. Simply noticing that that's happened, redirecting your attention back to being present with the temperatures, the textures, the experience of this present moment, mind, body, and heart experience. Checking in this moment. Am I present, or has my attention gotten caught up? Caught up in thinking, maybe making stories about sounds we're hearing. Just noticing the experience of this moment. And if you are not fully present, noticing how you might be able to direct your attention back to the present moment experience. And for the last few minutes of our meditation together, bringing in an element of your practice over the last month, and still keeping awareness grounded somewhat in the body, see if there's an intention you'd like to bring in for our practice here today, an intention to keep with you through the rest of our sit and discussion together.
Thank you, Jace. Oh, I thought I was here and I wasn't really yet. That was beautiful, especially including that reflection on intention. Because as I begin this first segment of our teachings today about the path factor we focus on this week, why this month, wise speech, what I first want to share my observations about is I find such rich connections among these first three path factors. And so to begin our session on wise speech with a connection to intention feels really rich and sweet to me. There's a sense in which the more I study the path, I realize one thinks of a path in linear terms, but I'm feeling this cycle, this almost the exact opposite of a vicious cycle, a virtuous cycle, where one element feeds another and just goes round and round and round. So as we begin to clarify and find a wiser view, for most of us, that includes a deepening of a sense of interdependence and of cause and effect. I am affected by what goes on around me. I cause changes, ripples in the world around me. And we are interdependent in that web of cause and effect. And for us as human beings who have evolved these capacities for communication through speech, one of the ways we live out that interdependence and we experience that web that we can see with that wise view is through our speech. Through our communication, written or verbal, or even nonverbal. And so view helps me to understand the impact and power of wise speech. Just as speech can help me to express my intentions. And can give form to my views. So there's this lovely virtuous cycle there, and of course it feeds right into what we look ahead to in the path when we think about wise action and wise livelihood. Just for a moment to take livelihood, think about the work settings you've had any experience of. And the extent to which much about the culture and the feel of that workplace has been created and conveyed by speech. Whoa. I spoke this morning with a young person whom I mentor, not from this Sangha, but out of town, actually, and we do this every Sunday morning. And she was telling me about being verbally attacked at work, and what it took for her not to lash back. And so her feel about where she was working was a lack of safety due to unwise speech. So that connection. And then, of course, move into the last segment of the path and the connections with speech. Our mindfulness and our concentration are not possible without the steadiness of behavior with integrity. And speech is such a big part of it. If she had chosen to lash back at this person who spoke to her so disrespectfully, she knows she'd have been experiencing distress and disruption, and her mindfulness practice would have been really difficult for her because she'd have been continuing that conversation. Similarly with concentration. And at the same time, our mindfulness, our focused awareness and concentration allows us to have that capacity to pause before we reactively lash out in speech. She said, I was so grateful for what we've been practicing together. Before I said anything, I could just stop for a moment and think, is this really what I want to say or do? And it wasn't. So I just want to really highlight for you that sense of the interconnectedness, the web that really is the Eightfold Path. And as we move into wise speech, we really begin to be able to sense, to feel, to see those interconnections. Just more specifically about speech, we're moving into the section of the path that is called in Pali sila, or integrity. And it's how we act in the world, in our interactions with others in the world. And that sense of integrity, wise speech, wise actions, wise livelihood, creates an alignment for us of our values and our actions that I actually think of as like body alignment. When I think of the word integrity, I think of an integrated body frame. So I look over and I see Jay sitting so beautifully. And it's to me a visual reminder of that sense of integrity. Are my values, my intentions and my views aligned with my actions? So this whole section on integrity begins to really connect in a vivid way with something that can become very concrete in our lived experience and can be a beautiful and sometimes challenging source of reflections, because I slouch sometimes. I don't always hold that sense of integrity, of alignment between my values and my actions. So just like my body may slouch, that integrity can go a little slack, a little limp sometimes too. That's an important area of learning for us. So we begin to actually live the Dharma and to live our path with this sense of integrity. Every aspect of our lives. Try to think of an area of your life in which you don't speak at some point. It ain't there. If you've got a little baby even who isn't verbal yet, if you're like 99% of parents, you're still speaking to them and you're non-verbally communicating with them in absolutely crucial ways. I'm goofy enough, I even used to talk to the dogs. And in very different tones, depending on the situation, some of it wise and some of it not. So thinking of our overall path and this interconnectedness, we can begin now to zero in a little more on what exactly do we mean by wise speech, and what will we be exploring as we look more fully this month in readings and reflections and our own practice. What do we mean by wise speech? If you've done any study of this before, or if you've looked ahead at any of the readings, there are different ways that different portions of the suttas define and divide up the factors involved. But there's a consistency among them all that relates wisdom in speech in a way that makes clear what I would call our web of interbeing needing to be served by, is what I'm saying true? Is it timely? And I'm going to say more about these. Is it true? Is it timely? Does it express kind and caring intentions? And is it of some benefit? Or is it just kind of idle? So I boil those different divisions of factors down to those four for myself. And the words may differ in different presentations, but I think the core questions, the core reflections, is it true? Is it timely? Is it kindly intended? Is it purposeful and beneficial? They're expressed at different times in those, what is it we're cultivating? What do we seek? We seek truth. We seek timeliness. We seek kindness. We seek purpose in our speech. But also what we're refraining from. As many teachings, like the five precepts, they are presented often in terms of what it is we're to avoid. So the four areas I described could be talked about in terms of, is it dishonest and false? Is it intended in a slanderous or harming, harsh way? Is it idle chatter? Just filling time, filling the air. Is it presented at an inappropriate time when it can't really be heard? So we are both positively seeking that truth, timeliness, kind intentions, and purpose, and we're avoiding harshness, we're avoiding dishonesty, we're avoiding idle chatter, and we're avoiding that sense of pushing ahead no matter whether the timing is right or not, because I want to say it. And it's been helpful to me to just boil it down to those four dimensions. And I love alliteration, so true and timely gets me started a little bit. And then kindly intended and purposeful, beneficial. And those are simple enough, and I can kind of repeat them enough for myself that I've got something I can do pretty quick. Because one of the things that wise speech takes is the awareness of that alignment between my intentions, my values, what I wish to cultivate, and how I'm about to act. Because we can mouth off real fast. And with a little mindfulness, I've got that pause, but I can't be going through a whole treatise, a doctoral dissertation about what I'm seeking. It's got to be pretty clear for me. Is what I said to Jace about the quality of that sit true? Yeah. Timely, right after it happened? Yeah. Kindly intended? Yeah. And I don't think it was just idle chatter. I think it mattered to give an example of what I hoped was wise speech right in the middle of our gathering. So I could check myself real quick before I said it. Okay, I want to look a little more closely at each area. I also want to remember to look at the time. Will you help me with that? Okay.
We'll try.
All right. This is a passion for me, so you can tell. Wise speech has been a big, big area of both challenge and deep practice for me. But talking about truth is one of the areas that can get most complicated and can raise a lot of questions for people. Because even defining what we know to be true is an area of difficulty for many people. And I may discern that what I was saying was true, but somebody else may have thought, geez, I was completely lost during that guided meditation. That didn't work for me at all. So there's a relativity about truth, as we know from science, that can make that first question about what's true complex at one level. And I think what has worked for me is I tie truth back to asking myself, am I aware of anything that would counter this? Am I aware of any other motivation for speaking? This gets into the area of intention. But is this about, I'm trying to butter up Jace because I want something? or greed. There's somebody else whose meditations I don't like, and I want them to hear that that's an example of what I like. So I'm being angry. Or delusion. I don't even know what a good meditation's all about. So I just take a look at truth from the best perspective that I can. And it is possible sometimes that we may say something that turns out not to be true. It's not raining right now. Well, maybe across the parking lot it is. But to the best of my knowledge, it's not. I didn't have an intention to deceive you if I said, oh, I think you can leave your umbrella. It's not raining right now. So truth relates to our intentions, whether we're speaking from greed, hatred, and delusion. Maybe we've got incomplete or inaccurate information, but we don't have an intention to deceive. And truth is so important because if you think about our experience today and our human history, that sense of I can trust what you're saying builds a sense of harmony and community. If I feel like in talking to you, I'm not sure if you're going to speak the truth to me, I don't feel that trust. I don't begin to build that bond. Our communities depend on that. If we say class starts at 1:30, you need to know that it ain't going to start at 1:45 or 2. Now, you might have gotten stuck on Highway 9 because the power lines were down. But basically, Jason intended it to be a true statement that he'd be here at 1:30. And that builds trust and community. I think one of the other things that's important about this truth dimension of wise speech is it ties back to our sense of what's real and what's wise. If we can't know what's real, we can't speak the truth. So there's a kind of attention that's involved in this. And I had to be listening to that guided meditation to be able to make a comment on it. So we're reflecting something about our attention with the truth of our speech, and our wisdom comes out through our speech in the truth of it. So is it true? Is it timely? That involves discerning somebody's ability to hear what I've got to say right now, and it involves me being patient and non-reactive enough to stop to evaluate that. I know there have been many places in the workplace that I may have had some important feedback to deliver to somebody, and I really meant it in their best interests, but it was going to be hard to hear. And maybe right in the middle of a blow-up wasn't going to be the moment to do it. But if I could wait till the next day when things had calmed down, I might be able to say, could we go back for a moment and reflect together on? And that might be more timely. Or it might be that if I waited, the whole moment and the openness is gone. So there's some discernment involved in figuring out what's really timely. And there's some ability to be able to hold off and pause, say, is this the right time to say this? I don't know about anybody else, but in my marriage, we sometimes had an agreement that we might say, I don't think it's good to continue this conversation right now. Could we pick this up at another time? I'm getting a little heated up. And that was an important principle in our being able to handle wise communication in intimacy, was to be able to say, ain't the right time, and I want to continue it, so we'll wait. Is it true? Is it timely? Is it kindly intended? And this takes the wisdom and the discernment to look at our own intentions when we speak. Are we seeking to create goodwill and connection, not division? Are we expressing love and respect, not harshness or anger? And one of the ones that's a challenge for me, I will acknowledge in honesty, am I just trying to present a fancy image of myself? Is my intention to look good? So kindly intended, promoting connection, promoting a sense of love and respect. And that can include sometimes saying things that are a little difficult to hear, but they're intended to build that connection. Is it true? Is it timely? Is it kindly intended? Is it purposeful or possibly idle chatter? Many of us have been socialized that silence is problematic. And sometimes we have a tendency to fill that silence with anything. Pay attention sometime at a party or a social event, and you may get some good experiences of idle chatter. And I don't mean that in a harshly critical way. I mean it in a light and sort of humorous way. But it's not just about filling time or looking good. It has a purpose, a beneficial purpose. And that can be an issue in some forms of communication that we're becoming more and more the pioneers in. Perfect example of what our communication devices do to influence us. Any of you who are deeply involved in social media, how much is idle chatter on our social media, huh? Yeah, I personally just renounced it because it's just too much of a black hole for me. I just sink right in. But idle chatter can definitely take us up in some of those modalities. So I know I've got maybe about a couple minutes. Yeah, a few more minutes. Let me say that I want to stretch what I consider to be wise speech to include as well in your reflections and your practice over the next month, inner speech. How do I talk to myself? Some traditional teachings don't mention that directly, but I think it's implicitly very much subject to those same principles, particularly kindly intended or slanderous in some way. And it's a hard one for me. I'm pretty rough on myself in my inner speech. I can also get inner speech going that's pretty idle chatter. I was laughing with Gary, who just finished a retreat at Insight Retreat Center, the ISC one, that I've caught myself as I'm transitioning out of retreats working on my grocery store list in the middle of a meditation. I mean, that's a little bit of some idle chatter as inner speech, probably. I could wait to do the grocery list, you know? So including inner speech, including silence as part of wise speech. There's sometimes a value to hearing something someone said and being clear that I honor it with my silence, not jumping in to say something in the middle of it, and not being thinking about my response already. Just honoring the moment with some silence can be an important part of wise speech. I also think the use of nonverbal communication that is consistent with our verbal communication is important. If I'm saying, oh, I'm fascinated with what you're saying, and I'm checking my email at the same time, and I'm looking away, and I'm all fidgety, I think the nonverbal communication is going to override the words I use. So I think those are dimensions and elements that become important when we really consider the depth of wise speech. And I would say that for me, it's related very much to what I consider to be this essential balance of wisdom and compassion. Finding that balance and expressing it through wise speech is a deep intention for me. And it may mean, for example, that I hear about your difficulty and I don't give a bunch of advice because I can't really fix it. and I honor with equanimity that balance of my wisdom of it, recognizing that, and still being willing to hear the pain of my young mentee on the phone this morning about her incident at work. I didn't have a fix. My wisdom told me that. My compassion told me how to listen and reflect. So wise speech finds that balance, that point of equanimity in wisdom and compassion. And I think that's about the time, right? Yeah. So that is an overview in kind of a 21st century form of the basic factors of wise speech and a little bit of an extension into those areas, as I said, of inner speech, of silence, of using nonverbal communication as well. I want to tell one story. I'll stretch the time a little bit to give some sense of the relevance of this. Some of you whom I know that I teach down at the medium security facility down at Roundtree in Watsonville. And I taught them an acronym that helps with wise speech, which is STOP, a stop sign. Stop, take a breath, observe, proceed. And it's just kind of a concrete, more contemporary way to help people think about that pause before you speak and not being reactive in your speech. And one of the guys came in the next week and said, Doc, that stop sign really helped me. And I said, tell us about it. He'd been out in the exercise yard. The guard in a large group of inmates had come to him and pulled him out and said, you, I'm drug testing you. Well, his whole kind of macho background said, get back in the guy's face. I've been disrespected. And I got to show that I won't put up with that kind of shit. And then he said, I remembered the stop sign. I stopped. I took a breath. I looked back at the group of guys with me. And they were all younger than me. They were all young dudes. And I thought, who do I want to be right now in my speech, in this moment? And he said, I want to be a teacher. I want to teach dignity. And he said, it happened faster than I could even begin to say it all. And I turned to the guard and I said, whatever you need to do, sir. Well, some of the young guys said, we talked about it. That was so incredible. It was dignity. Well, he later told me when he came back out to the community that in that moment, his ability to pause before he spoke and then to see the ripple effects of his speech told him that through his mindful speech, he could rewrite his story. Rewrite the story of who he is. So I just wanted to share that as part of the power of speech used mindfully to not only express, but to help us, in a sense, rewrite who we are and parts of us that may not be being expressed. His dignity in simply saying, whatever you need to do, sir. And having that be so important for the people who watched him. He rewrote his story with wise and mindful speech. So we're now going to use some speech in small groups. Okay, here's the first question. Which of those guidelines, true, timely, kindly intended, purposeful, do I follow most easily, and which are most challenging for me? So where are my areas of relative ease in wise speech, and where are my greatest challenges? And if you want to just do ease or just challenges, that's okay. But if you can, give a little view of both. Okay, question clear? All right, go for it. And you got a couple of minutes to speak. Okay, we've got a round two of questions, and it's wonderful to see that your dialogue, your exchange is rich enough that There isn't any instant stop. So we're going to do a second round of question. Whose wise speech has inspired me? And when have I been really aware of speaking wisely? What was that like? Because our own behavior can bring some inspiration too. So whose wise speech has inspired me? And when have I been the wise speaker? And what was that like? So either or both of those in the same sequence, and again, a couple minutes each, then some group exchange, and then we'll talk as a large group. Okay? So here we go again. Okay. So if you just stay where you are as far as your seating, but kind of open your attention to the larger room now, let's hear if there's anything this group here has to share, or we don't need to make it official in that way. Just anybody pop up if there was some observations. Anything you want to share with the larger group from what came up in your small group comments? Yeah.
One interesting topic we just touched on is cultural differences. Ooh. Yeah.
That is, that. Wow, that's a rich one. Thank you. Cultural differences. Yes, very, very true. Very true. And knowing when you move into a new culture, you're not maybe necessarily having difficulty with the language per se, but some of the norms of that culture's means of communication may be very important to learn to convey your intentions. Yeah, good one. Yeah.
Well, and gender as well, by the way. Gender as well.
Yes.
Because there is a male culture, female culture, or American female. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
There's so, a gender culture that has to be, I think. I mean, my perspective on things is the male perspective. So I have to exercise myself sometimes. It's important to me to step into the role and say, okay, now that this is the woman you're talking to, and so her context is different than yours. So I do the little thought experiments some periodically. Like I'll hear be in a conversation with some people, a woman, and I'll kind of say, okay, now what do you think she's going to say? You know, I mean, just in my head, just so that I can change my perspective, try to get a fresh perspective from a from probably the most obvious difference that we have culturally, and that's male female.
And I think also, not this is not saying yes, but I think also recognizing that there is change taking place. That what we thought of as a binary world is not, and allowing for loosening and softening some of what may have been our expectations about the culture of speech in that regard. That can be a rich area in and of itself. It's also where sometimes I think wise speech involves inquiry rather than statement. Mm-hmm. Tell me what this means to you. Tell me what would be meaningful to you right now. What are you needing to hear? You know, there's sometimes more room for inquiry and a little less for me trying to find just the right thing to say. Yeah. Or making assumptions. Yes. Other observations from any of the groups? Yeah.
This is sort of related to the about the cultural differences and gender differences. We had some conversations about intergenerational
patterns
of speaking and that was a theme that kind of went around.
Intergenerational, yes. And I know sometimes that can get humorous. I teach at Dominican Oaks, I teach mindfulness, and most of my students are in their late 80s and 90s, and I talk about those of us who are older, and they laugh and say, honey, you're about the same age as my daughter. So I may think of myself as an old lady, but I'm their kid. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
even as we're, you know, practicing wise speech is very much practice and lots of material, but I find myself, and I think it just resonated a little bit, in among many people who are not trying to practice wise speech.
Oh, yeah.
That can be a very lonely place to be. So when so much is coming at you, let's say idle chit chat or material that isn't coming from a place of timeliness or kindness, I don't mean aggressive, so but isn't purposeful.
Yes.
I find that difficult to navigate. So the choices seem to be quiet. Or to react. I don't know. I find that a complicated kind of muddy thing.
That's a very interesting observation. It is complicated and muddy. And I think part of what we're dealing with is, at least right now, we're in a culture that values asserting yourself verbally and at multiple levels asserting yourself, taking up airtime, being kind of tough in your speech and so on, and a little bit polarized. Yeah, it can be hard to be the one who's being a little gentler and softer and quieter. Yeah. Have to really go back to intentions and view. And Sangha. Yeah. Any other observations? Very rich. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you for your patience. So I'm going to talk some more about wise speech, and I really appreciate the setup that Leslie gave us earlier, because I'm going to go more deeply into the factors that can support our ability to engage in wise speech, and then into the factors that can make it more difficult for us to succeed in our intention of cultivating wise speech, so the factors that end up making us engage in more unskillful speech. So looking, I think I'll start with, I like to end on a good note. So I'm gonna start with the factors that I have found both in my practice, my study of the Buddha's words, as well as my own practice, my own practical experience that detract from our ability to engage in wise speech. And as Leslie mentioned earlier, the path factors weave so strongly together that anytime you look at one individual path factor, you often end up looking at the other path factors. And so it can be helpful to skip ahead just a little bit and just know that if this is your first time looking at each of the Four Noble or Eightfold Paths, looking at each of the factors, then you might not have done much work directly with, say, right concentration. Or you might have. You might not have done much direct working with the hindrances, which can come up in like mindfulness of the dharmas. So just know that if these are new ideas, that you will go more deeply into them. So starting by looking at the five hindrances, because I find them to be a helpful way to look at the conditions that make the mind less skillful and tend to lead us into actions, including speech, that are not the wisest that we might have chosen in that moment. So the five hindrances are sensual desire, anger, restlessness or worry, and sloth or torpor, and doubt. And so as we begin to notice what the mind is like when we're experiencing each of the five hindrances, we can begin to notice the ways in which those states tend to lend us into unskillful action, unskillful speech. And we can also begin to notice, I guess, earlier and earlier warning signs of when we're getting caught up in the hindrances, which can then enable us to maybe not speak from that moment when we're in the caught up state. So an example might be if we're in, and I think anger is probably one of the most prominent ones. When we're in an angry state, we can find ourselves speaking in ways that might be factually true, but not kind, and perhaps not timely. So just noticing the rush of anger, which honestly, I do a lot of work around challenging emotions, and I find it really helpful to honor the helpfulness that anger can play in our lives. So noticing that there are times where I would not have spoken up, I would not have set boundaries where I needed to, I wouldn't have been able to maybe stop something that was happening that really was harmful. But also noticing that anger has caused me to say a lot of really unskillful things in my life and things that I probably wouldn't have chosen to say if I hadn't been in such a caught up, angry state. And similarly, the other hindrances can cause us to speak in ways that aren't in alignment with the checklist of wise speech. So simply noticing that. And that can be looked at as, in a more general sense, just noticing the conditions of the mind and the heart that lead themselves to unwise speech. And then the other dimension that I like to look at for setting the groundwork for unwise speech is physical conditions. So times when we're like hungry, when we're tired, if you guys are familiar with any like recovery work, there's the acronym of HALT, which I believe hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. So lonely is maybe more of a heart-mind thing, but just noticing that there's this pre-existing understanding that when our physical bodies are in certain states, it lends itself to unskillful action of various sorts. And so there's, you know, there you'll see memes online that are like, I'm sorry for the things I said when I was hungry. And it's true too, I'm sorry for the, some of the things that I said when I was tired. And so noticing that the state that this body is in really has this interplay back and forth with how the mind works and how this entire being is in the world with the actions and its level of skillfulness or unskillfulness. And you can also, if the five hindrances are too long of a list, so going into the mindfulness of dharmas, you can also go to just the threefold list of greed, hatred, and delusion. So those, I think it's, you're looking at pretty much the same material as the hindrances versus the three fetters, I think they're called. But they can be parceled out into whatever way of looking at it makes sense for you. So am I, are my thoughts being distorted right now by different experiences in this mind body? And when the distortion is there, we can't see clearly what's going on, both inside of our experience and outside of ourselves. And when we can't see clearly what's going on, then we can't make the wisest choice possible. Whereas when we do see clearly what's going on, as we go into the supportive conditions for wise speech, then we are able to then make the wisest choice possible in our speech and be able to check our wise speech gates and see what's going on. In fact, I think wise speech and wise action can kind of be boiled down in general to when we're seeing clearly versus when we're not. So going back to one of the two path factors that you have studied with already, there's the wise view of am I looking at the world in as clear a way as possible? Am I really seeing what's going on in myself? Am I really seeing what's going on in the people in the world around me? Or is it the case that I'm constricted? Is my view narrowed in some way, shape, or form? And the ways that meditation and this, you know, entire Eightfold Path practice can really assist us in seeing more and more clearly is by noticing the very tangible, visceral parts of experience that can then call our attention to when the mind is constricted and also call our attention to when the mind is expansive, when it's aware, when it's present, and when it's connected. So just really spending some time to notice how all the path factors can support each other in that virtuous cycle that Leslie spoke about earlier. And I appreciate taking some time to notice that in previous points of my life, I was in a pretty negative, vicious cycle of more and more unskillful action. And that having engaged in these practices, I'm now engaging in more and more skillful action. That can be very helpful to notice. And so moving into some of the other supportive factors, In addition to the right view being supportive of wise speech, because I can clearly see when I'm, you know, angry and shouldn't be speaking, or when I'm feeling very expansive, very connected with my compassion, very connected with my truth and maybe the truth of the situation, such as we can see it. You know, it's also good to admit that we probably will not see 100% clearly, but to know that we want to set that intention and move towards more and more clearly seeing. And then there's the right intention that you spent the last month working on. So the intention of renunciation, of letting go of the hindrances and letting go of the unskillful actions, and intention of goodwill and compassion, which is related to our awareness of the interconnectedness of all of life. And then moving forward beyond right speech, I guess jumping a little bit past the other two right action path factors, then you move into the concentration or the wisdom factors. And so noticing how much mindfulness really plays into our ability to speak wisely, relating back to this, am I in alignment with reality? Am I seeing clearly what's going on? And it was interesting to notice that one of the most beneficial practices for me that supported my wise speech cultivation was body mindfulness. So not only noticing what I spoke about earlier of am I hungry or am I tired, but also noticing how fine-tuned this entire system of signals is. So when I'm feeling anger or when I'm feeling maybe daydreamy, delusion, distorted thoughts, there are signals in this body that I have really not paid attention to for a very long time. And so body mindfulness for me has been really, really key for wise speech and wise action practice, because I can notice when I'm starting to get constricted and closed down, when my vision is kind of narrowing. I feel like depending on what the mind state is, depending on kind of what hindrance or fetter is present, I get the same sort of narrowness of tunnel vision, but it's different tunnels. So there's the tunnel feeling of sense desire, there's the tunnel feeling of anger, there's a tunnel feeling of restlessness and worry, and that I think remorse also goes in with that one as well. I spend a lot of time regretting things, so restlessness, anxiety, and remorse. There's the tunnel vision of sloth and torpor, which is more of like a really weird dissolving of all of reality, but it's still a very narrowing because you start to not be able to see different parts. It's almost like life starts to pixelate. And then there's the narrow tunnel vision of doubt. And so just really getting to know all of these experiences on a visceral level and via the signals that my body was giving enabled me to then take some space to pause, to implement like the stop practice, which I was taught during mindfulness-based stress reduction. And by doing that, I was then able to at least not speak where I shouldn't have. So I think my first practice with wise speech was just like kind of a withholding and a renunciation in and of itself. It's like, all right, I'm not sure what to say wisely, but I at least know that this thing that wants to come out of my mouth right now, and especially the way it wants to come out of my mouth, is not wise. So one of the areas that I've had probably the most success of implementing wise speech, of developing it, is in boundary setting with people. And this can be something as simple as boundary setting with myself of, oh, I'm not seeing clearly, and I'm trying to speak to myself in a way that usually is trying to like bully certain behavior out of me. And it's really not going to get this speech path that wants to come out is not really going to get to my true intention. It's not going to let my actual value and intention in this moment play out. So what could I do instead? And so I've been able to develop over, you know, several years of practice with this. I've been able to now set boundaries with myself, with loved ones, which is particularly challenging, even with work and my volunteer efforts. And so just noticing and really appreciating that's something that I've had some mile markers towards, that there's been some good progress made. And then an area that I wanted to share that I feel like I've had kind of ongoing challenges with wise speech has been in the area of politics. So I would imagine many of us can understand that, is that sometimes there are these trigger issues for us, hot button issues, that make us pretty instantly go off into distorted headspaces. And especially when lives are at stake, and when any, you know, manner of dignity or basic rights are at stake, it can just be so hard to see clearly enough to act in the most useful way possible. You know, so especially when it comes to politics, usually I'm really focused on, I'm pretty sure I've got the, at least my truth of it down, and I've really got maybe some element of kindness down, but the timeliness and the usefulness, I'm still really, really struggling with. And I'm so grateful that I have at least more connection to truthfulness and to kindness in the realm of talking about how we organize ourselves as a society. And I really hope that I'm able to then do the work needed to help make these things more and more easeful as time goes on. And one story from the Buddha that really helps ground me when I think about what is wise speech and what is not wise speech is, there is a story, I think it's maybe even a collection of stories, speaking about the characteristics for people that are going to be enlightened, sort of the necessary characteristics that need to be developed. And one of the things mentioned is that speaking truthfully, speaking wisely, is a core characteristic for one who wants to progress to enlightenment, to full freedom from suffering. And the justification given just struck me so hard the first time I heard it. And the justification for it was that one who does not speak wisely is not in alignment with truth. And if you're not in alignment with truth, of like reality, then you're not going to be able to be free from suffering, fully free from suffering. And, you know, we don't mean that way in just the first mark of wise speech way, not just like, are you speaking the literal factual truth, leaving aside our limited perspective and inability to see maybe 100% truth, but taking all of those gates that Leslie mentioned as all elements of being in touch with reality, which means that truthfulness is being in touch with reality. It means that kindness is being in touch with reality, because it honors that truth, the reality of interconnectedness of all beings. So often the kindness gets lost by excuse of, I'm telling the truth, but that's losing the truth, the reality of our interconnectedness, of the truths of kindness. And then the truths of timeliness, you know, so speaking in ways that will land or not land, that will tip people's experiences one way or another, is another way of being in alignment with reality. Because the reality is not, I speak and you hear exactly what I want you to hear. The reality is that all of the different ears around us and all of the different minds interpreting what those ears hear will have a different experience. And so just noticing that each of these elements of reality and our connectedness with it or our distance from it really does play directly into our ability to attain full liberation from suffering, individually, and I would argue necessarily collectively too. And I really appreciated Leslie bringing in the inner voice as well as the external voice. And one thing that I've noticed too in my studying of, let me do it on time. So the last thing I want to mention is simply that when we look at these things inside of ourselves, so when we start to notice, oh, when I'm angry, my speech gets less wise. And when I'm, you know, tired, my speech gets less wise. I also notice that it can give us a greater sense of compassion for other people and their experience. And so when somebody flies off the handle at me, I can say, you are caught up in a hindrance right now. You are fettered. And not that it excuses unwise, definitely does not excuse violent or harmful behavior, but it does give us a greater sense of what the other person in front of us is going through, the other people, what they're going through. And that can be helpful for us to not get caught up in cycles of reactivity, just to have an awareness of, this is kind of what my experience is from the inside. And now I can see from the outside that you are also experiencing something similar. So you can see the ways in which these elements all weave back and forth into each other. Yes. And so given that, we'll move now into another round of small group discussions. So your first discussion question would be to looking back on a time where you either engaged in particularly skillful or particularly unskillful, I'll let you choose, speech. What conditions were there that may have been there to cause those things? So what can you look to in your experience, your internal and your external conditions, that may have led to particularly skillful or particularly unskillful speech?
All right. As you wrap up your small group, we're going to ask you, in the interest of time, to have any final sharing on that second question be part of a larger group discussion, and any other general questions or comments you've had about today's teaching. So we'll just use this as our wrap-up Q&A, as well as sharing any impressions from your time together for this second set of questions. And I don't know about you, but I found that question about one practice that I'm going to carry forward as an intention pretty rich. I'd love to hear any intentions that you're moving forward with in regards to wise speech. Yeah.
Well, we really like that STOP acronym, because it's not only is it practical, but it's instructive, and it helps you pause, and that pause your intention may change in that pause.
Absolutely, like this young guy who was, you know, ready to get in the officer's face and then said, that's not who I want to be, and just said, whatever you need to do, officer. And my guess is that changed something for the officer, too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and if you're like me, I was saying to Jace, if you're visual, just the idea of seeing that stop sign, we're all conditioned to know what a stop sign means. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And acronyms are kind of fun. Stop, take a breath, observe, proceed. Yep. Okay, thank you for that. Mm-hmm.
The practice I'm going to try to remember is... in one particular relationship where I find that I'm not being skillful, I'm going to try to pause and not say the thing, but write it down, because to look back at what is my intention, what is it I'm actually trying to communicate, because I think often I'm trying to communicate something that could be much better communicated in some other time and skillful way.
Beautiful. And it takes me to, if we had more time, the really rich experience for me of training in nonviolent communication, where you get down to the need that's underneath maybe the rotten thing I'm about to say, and the need is okay. And there may be a different way to express that need. So you write it down, and then you can feel into your legitimate need in that.
Right,
yeah.
And it isn't necessarily a rotten thing, saying. It's just not a skillful thing. It's a timely thing, you know, so that's what I'm trying to do. Thank you.
Yeah. Others, yeah.
One of the things that we talked about was, like you said, the timeliness of, I get so caught up in, I have to respond now. I have to deal with this immediately. Not in 30 seconds, but now. And all the people that I admire, Dalai Lama, Buddha, all of them, when they're talked to, you never see them respond immediately. There's a beat. there's two beats, there's three beats before they respond, even if it's like, where's the bathroom? They just take a second and center themselves and give the explanation. And that's one of the things that I'm working on myself now, trying to find that time to not immediately respond, because I've always been conditioned to respond immediately, one way or the other, fight or flight, you know, smart, dumb, whatever. So taking that beat helps to, you know, to stop, but just think about what it is you're really trying to accomplish, what you're really trying to deal with, and give it the time it deserves.
And as you do that, sometimes one real challenge for me that you're inspiring me to make a practice out of is not be spending all that interim time, even if I make it, planning what I'm going to say next. Mm-hmm. Maybe really reflecting on what I've heard. Wouldn't that be odd, huh? Yeah, okay. Other practices moving forward, or just other comments or questions?
I was thinking also about speech, and not only, and I think you've said this already, but just not only what you communicate with the other person, but how those words impact you. And if they're kind words, how you feel, or if they're angry words, how you feel, and that you can't trick yourself into thinking, I'm saying angry words, but those words don't affect me. I'm strong enough to withstand those angry words. Those angry words still influence your whole thing. Or those words of love and compassion. I'm just thinking of that.
And flow is such a perfect description, because as you're saying, it goes in both directions. If I say something really kind at just the right time and so on, I'm going to feel a real buzz from that. And I think part of what you're suggesting with your gestures, and I just did the same thing, goes back to what several of you have said, and Jace made a big point of too. It's an embodied experience. And we note the impact of our speech and our exchange with each other better when we're really tuned into the experience of the body. Yeah, because you, when you were speaking, I don't know if you were aware, but your gestures were coming back to your body and kind of down here in this heart, chest area. Yeah. Other intentions, observations, comments, questions?
I'll go. I have stuff kind of weaved in and out from what you were saying, what our experiences and intentions were. What I kind of pulled together in that thread was this business about intentions, which, you know, we just came out of. As part of that flow of the path that you've been talking about. And then bringing on also, what are our conditions, not only our physical conditions, but our mental or our spiritual conditions at the time that we're having these conversations. And one of the things that came to me in my own personal reflection about where I come skillfully or unskillfully is whether I'm selfing, right? Or whether I'm being a not self. And it just came up for me as we were talking, is that when I'm in not self and I'm helping others, it appears that what I'm doing is very skillful. It's honest, it's true, it's necessary, it's timely, it meets all the gates, right? But when it's about me and my opinion and whether I'm right, and, you know, am I looking out for myself, am I angry? So it goes to these conditions, not just physically, but also spiritually in this business of self. So I think, you know, I could just like, self, not self, right? And then it passed through those gates pretty quickly. And so I thought that was a interesting way to that I can continue to look at it. I've gotten good at the is it necessary or not, so a lot of things I don't say anymore because most of them aren't necessary, but now I can look about why, right? Is it not necessary because I'm selfing again, which is my biggest thing. So, and it was interesting. So thank you for bringing that to us.
I'm struck too, again, looking at a cultural level. We're at a time when we have an expression like selfing. We take selfies. And if you think about what people do in what they upload on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, they're creating an idealized kind of illusion of themselves. And that's become what we present to the world. And then we're worried that back behind that, somebody might actually see the real me. Ah. Yeah.
That's why I make sure he makes fun of myself online as well, so no one gets the wrong idea.
But when you think about it, we're so encouraged daily to have this persona that is, you know, my work face, my poker face, whatever, you know, and it ends up being a shield to addressing and connecting with a person. I'm talking to a person that has a life that is, you know, whatever, to just remember that that's a person that you're talking to, even though they just called you and are talking about your AT&T bill. What personal challenge.
Yes, sometimes those business transactions, quote unquote, in our lives can become important areas of wise speech. I know for me, when you talk about that sense of satisfaction and what you feel from kind speech, sometimes I'll set an intention for the day that I'm going to thank the everyday people who are serving me or doing something for me and express appreciation for anything done like that. Guy came from the plumber company the other day, and he did extra things that he didn't have to be doing. And I made a point of calling up his boss and commending him by name. And I think of that as a little bit what you're talking about too, that wise speech in absolutely everyday interactions can change them. Yeah. Bellows Plumbing now knows that Sam did an extraordinary job. Well, shall we take just a couple of minutes for a short settling sit, and then we'll wrap up following that. Just, I don't even know if we need the bell, Jace. Just take a couple of moments and settle back in to some inner awareness and perhaps really feel into whatever your own learning, your own sense of renewed or new wisdom may be present for you, and your intentions for that. And as we move forward in this next month with opportunities to study, reflect, and practice wise speech, may our intentions guide and ground us, and may we feel the mutuality of the web of our practice and wisdom shared together today here. Thank you. This is definitely one of those bi-directional experiences. I feel like I got as much teaching as I may have, quote, offered. And we will be meeting again on January 12th. And hopefully some of you will also have some mentoring opportunities between now and then. And if you have any questions or anything you want to check with either of us about now, we are here for you for a couple minutes. And if mats and stuff got a little out of whack, it's helpful if people can put them back. Thank you. And of course, our Sangha appreciates us paying attention to those pink sheets and remembering our pledge campaign.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.